I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. Thank you for being with us on this Monday. In our efforts to share things we like with our friends on platforms like Facebook and Google, we often overlook a basic fact. These social media giants curate what we see in the order they choose. Or rather, their computer algorithms curate what we see and in what order. Sometimes that means serving up fake news for you and you and you and me. Other times it might mean offering us comfort food, posts that just confirm our own biases. And lately that's led to a lot of criticism for Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. But now Zuckerberg says he's hoping to rein in the spread of misinformation. He's vowed to fine-tune those algorithms. Zeynep Tufekci at the University of North Carolina says fine-tuning Facebook to remove fake news from across the political spectrum should have been done years ago.
You know, liberal or conservative, I don't see anything that should cause any controversy. And the fact that it took so much pressure and effort, that's a little disconcerting that we're here after so much has already happened in the sphere. But it's an interesting moment in that most of the ad money that used to go to newspapers that supported journalism. It wasn't perfect journalism, but it was still journalism that was supported by the ad money. Right now, this ad money is going more and more to Facebook and to a degree to Google. They're gobbling up literally almost two-thirds of the ad money out there.
Well, I was reading this weekend about advertising products on Facebook called dark posts, newsfeed messages targeting specific people, political ads, for example, as one person said in the New York Times, ads that push the exact right buttons for the exact right people at the exact right times. How does this all work?
In this campaign, Donald Trump's social media team has given an interview to Bloomberg where they said they specifically targeted African-Americans and young women with messages that they hoped would be demobilizing. So those were ads that only they would see. And they would highlight comments that Clinton might have made about the super predator comment from some years ago that got some play. So they would sort of package that comment and aim it at African-American men, or they would highlight something about Bill Clinton and try to flood young women's social media network with this. It's not meant to persuade anyone because those aren't very likely Donald Trump constituencies. It's meant to discourage people from voting in a way that you don't get a chance to counter it. So you don't know until the election is over and the Donald Trump social media team says, look, we did this, which they said they did this, so I'm not making this up from my own observations. I wrote about this in 2012 after President Obama won. And I said, look, these tools that a lot of people credit President Obama with winning, I said these tools, wherever you are on the political spectrum, have great potential for misinformation, for these dark ads that are targeted to specific people that unlike TV ads or radio ads or newspaper ads or editorials that you never get a chance to see. So there's no rebuttal going on. And they are fed by these algorithms that promote virality. So if it's outrageous, it goes viral. If it is getting a lot of people hating it, it also goes viral because there's a lot of comments on it, though. And I try to warn about the dangers of this for our democracy. If anybody cares about having a democracy in which we can actually debate ideas, we can actually debate policy, and that we're not completely polarized into these dueling factions who live in alternate universes to each other, we have to care about how do we create some common ground rather than be drowning in these clickbait, which is often produced for profit. It's not even produced by partisans. We saw some of the biggest pieces of fake news, like Hillary Clinton killed an FBI agent kind of fake news, was produced by a bunch of teenagers in Macedonia.
Right.
All they wanted to do was make a few bucks, and that's kind of crazy.
It's still flabbergasting just hearing you say this. I mean, we heard a lot of this during the campaign. I know you wrote about it a few years ago, and now we're discussing it again. I mean, it's like wag the dog on steroids. So why can't Facebook train its software to spot bogus stories?
Well, it can do that, and it should do that, and it just didn't do that. It's more profitable, I suppose, and also makes them able to claim we didn't do anything. I can't really explain why. It seems irresponsible to me not to do this. So the other thing is, though, it's not just tweeting at bogus news, which would be great. That would be a very important first step. But I hope they would also try to figure out a way not to create more polarized information bubbles around us. I want to be clear, this is coming from the demand side as well. We're kind of clicking on
this stuff. Well, I was going to say, I mean, I know how most of my friends use Facebook. They're not looking for people who disagree with them. And I get that. We're looking for like-minded people for our own community. So how much do you think Facebook is responsible for our self-affirmations of our own beliefs? And how much are we responsible?
It's not an either-or. It's true, for example, that people have a sweet tooth. That still wouldn't make it okay for a school cafeteria to serve Halloween candy to students for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I would be first to say that the filter bubbles and this clicking on things we like and being close to countering information, it comes from human nature. What Facebook has done, however, is build a business that amplifies and entrenches this. There are places around in the world where Facebook and the internet are basically interchangeable. That's all people have. If you got to be a $300-400 billion company in the space of a decade because you put yourself as an intermediary between us and our loved ones, us and our acquaintances, and us and our news, if you've got so rich off our human nature and desire to connect, that wealth and that power comes with a responsibility to say, well, maybe we shouldn't serve Halloween candy for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Yes, people want this stuff and they will click on this stuff, but maybe we shouldn't let a bunch of Macedonian teenagers flood U.S. electorate with absolutely fraudulent stuff and make money while they're doing this.
And yet there's a lot they could do. And yet Mark Zuckerberg talks about erring on the side of letting people share what they want whenever possible, i.e. eating the Halloween candy for breakfast, and not being an arbiter of truth. So are you hopeful that the business model will change at Facebook?
It will change if the people who work at Facebook – Facebook's much more than Mr. Zuckerberg – if the people who work at Facebook consider – where they want their name to be when history books about this period are written. So can something be done? Yes. Is Facebook the only culpable actor in all the things we do? Of course not. It's a complicated mix, and there's a lot more we can talk about. But Facebook has a major role that comes from its power, its unique positioning in that it has no competitor and has 2 billion people, that it controls what they see every day. And this is really more than the stock options the people who work there are going to get. This is about what it's going to say in the history books. I think a lot can be done.
Zeynep Tufekci at UNC often joins us on The World to talk about society and technology. Thanks very much, Zeynep.
Thank you.